talking to you this morning about the Green Industries Education Program that we have for best management practices in Florida. This has been developed over the last number of years with a lot of input from a lot of folks, as we'll see here in just a minute. I don't know about where you folks are from, but urban growth in Florida is just accelerating at wild speeds. We've had excessive development. Basically, what we've done is we've paved over the entire state. You know, we're not looking at green spaces, we're not looking at naturalized areas, we're looking at pavement, rooftops, all of these impervious surfaces, and of course, that leads to a number of environmental problems and issues, and that's really what we're dealing with. In Florida, we have approximately 6 million acres of lawns statewide. We have somewhere between 1,400 and 1,500 golf courses. We have numerous thousands of acres, hundreds of thousands of acres in sod production, and many miles of roadways covered with grass. So that makes turf grass a very large and probably the single largest crop that we actually grow in the state of Florida. So of course, when we're talking about non-point source pollution issues, people tend to point the finger at the most visible item, and in many cases, that's lawns, golf courses, turf grass activities in general. And we are, of course, very visible. Non-point source pollution is the driving force behind the best management practices that we have in the state of Florida. I'm sure you're all very familiar with non-point source pollution and its effects. Clippings left on the roadside, of course, you know, a lot of nitrogen and phosphorus in those, and they're going to work their way down into the storm drain very rapidly, leading to a nearby water body and potentially causing algae blooms such as we see here. This picture was taken on Florida's west coast outside of Sarasota, a large tourist resort type area, also a lot of very expensive homes in the area, and of course, you know, the whole tourism and beach type of industry is extremely important. And local officials justifiably do get very upset when we have responses like this in our water bodies. So of course, a great deal of concern over these issues relating to our water quality here. And again, the finger quite often, whether it's justified or not, gets pointed at the turf systems, when actually non-point source, as we all know, is coming from multiple and diverse sources. Now, there was state legislation in Florida that paved the way for the best management practices and the ensuing educational program that we have. In 1999, the state legislature passed a TMDL bill, and this kind of provided the mechanism to get the BMP ball rolling for both agricultural industries and non-agricultural entities as well. Of course, it established the impaired water bodies, addressed implementation of BMPs and non-point source pollution. It directed the Florida Department of Environmental Protection to oversee the implementation of voluntary non-agricultural BMPs. And non-agricultural, of course, synonymous with turf, urban landscapes, golf course, etc. So these are voluntary, although at this point in time they're starting to become regulated. And they're non-ag. The Florida Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services oversees the agriculture BMPs, and of course all of the ag industries have started implementing BMPs as well. It's become a way of life. One important thing that many of you are probably aware about a BMP is that BMPs must be viable for the industries. They have to be able to remain economically competitive. It can't put you out of business to do a BMP. And this has been an interesting point as we've dealt with many of the urban agriculture sectors in development of our BMPs. They've resisted. In many cases, the folks who are managing the lawns around the state of Florida, we have several different categories of businesses and license holders that can do that in Florida. Some of them are lawn care landscape services, some of them are pest control operators, and they have come together in a very unified force and pretty strongly resisted a lot of these attempts at regulation of how they do their jobs. So it's been a very interesting time. Back in 2000, we had our first fertilizer ordinance in the state of Florida passed. This was passed in St. John's County. St. John's County is on the northeast side of Florida. It's a coastal county, and St. Augustine is the county seat. St. Augustine, of course, is the oldest city in the nation, so it's a very pristine, very naturalized environment, and a lot of folks concerned about water quality issues in that area. The interesting thing about this fertilizer ordinance that they passed in St. John's County is that they passed it very quickly at the beginning of the year 2000. It was passed by the board and went into effect before anybody, either from the university, from the regulatory agencies, water management districts, or from the industry, had a chance to even be aware of it. And as you might guess, there was quite a bit of upheaval once this became a known thing, especially from the industry folks. Industry and UF researchers, myself and some other researchers, went to the Board of County Commissioners to try and get them to change some of what they had in this ordinance. We'll go over what some of these ordinance points were in just a minute. They really did not want to listen. They were not necessarily polite nor interested in hearing about the sound science that perhaps should have been used in passing this ordinance. It resulted in a lawsuit between the pest control industry and the county government that went on for about 3 years. At the end of that three-year period, they were able to come together in agreement based largely on the development of an educational program which would certify anybody who was applying fertilizers in the St. John's County area. This program was going to be developed with, of course, industry, DEP, other regulatory agencies, and delivered through the University of Florida. Some wording in the ordinance providing for regulation of golf course lawn and turf fertilization, whereas improper use, including overuse of fertilizers containing nitrogen, caused significant leaching. And, you know, this is a very debatable issue. Quite a bit of research has been done on nutrient leaching. We have projects underway right now throughout the state of Florida showing that, yes, we can get some leaching of nutrients when we're fertilizing turf areas, but if we're applying the fertilizer correctly, we actually minimize leaching and can actually improve the overall environmental quality because we're growing a good stand of grass, which is, of course, holding the soil in place, providing good buffers, etc. So not a lot of science really went into this. After this agreement came together, we started working on development of a BMP manual. This BMP manual consisted of different sections. Turf grass fertilization, of course, was extremely critical. Overall turf grass care and management as well. Landscape fertilization and cultural practices, irrigation best management practices, and pesticide safety and handling were all important components of this. Representation from the University of Florida, the lawn care industry, water management districts, etc. Notice that last interest group that I mentioned, environmental groups. We had quite a few environmental groups represented too. So it was very interesting. We had several different points of view. All in all, making the document and the whole educational program much stronger than it would have been perhaps otherwise, because we did have input from very diverse stakeholders. Our objectives were very simple. It was to reduce non-point source pollution, period. We knew there was a problem. We knew that we were, in some cases, a component of that problem, and we wanted to stop it. One reason why we wanted to work proactively on this is because we also wanted to limit these local ordinances. There had been a few others that popped up back in 2000 and 2001, and we didn't want ordinances occurring in multiple counties or cities around the state. We also thought that this might result in future rulemaking. At this time, we weren't sure about that, but sure enough, now in 2007, we're seeing that that is indeed the case. We also wanted to provide for development of an educational program. We wanted uniform education to provide for CEUs for these folks, where they could learn, you know, about a little bit more than just the latest chemical products. We wanted them to become aware of the environmental issues as well. All right, now this is fast-forwarding from 2000, 2002 area, now up to 2006. In 2006, we had an insurgence of more local ordinances popping up. And each place where we see a star here, that's St. John's County right there, this is where we had either an ordinance proposed or passed in the year 2006. So all of a sudden, we went from St. John's County, one in Palm Beach County, to all of these other ordinances. 2007, look at the explosion here of these red stars here. Particularly, I want you to note this southwest area of Florida. This is Sarasota County right here. We actually have two stars within Sarasota County, one for the county, one for the city of Sarasota. Manatee County, many of the fragile key towns through here, Longboat Key, the city of Sanibel, and all of the counties down southwest Florida. So this whole area becoming a real target by many of these city and county commissions. Now, just imagine for a minute, if you are working as a lawn care company, and let's say you're a large company, you probably don't work in just one county. All of these ordinances vary just a little bit in some, either one or two minor details. So if you're crossing from Sarasota County into Charlotte County and the rules change when you cross that county line, odds are very good that your technicians and your folks are not going to be in compliance all the time. And that's one of the biggest problems that we're facing right now with some of these ordinances, this and the lack of science that's being devoted to it. Now, that was just kind of a highlight to set the frame for some of the rest of what this program does. The Commercial BMP Educational Program is funded, like I said, by the Department of Environmental Protection in Florida. It's delivered by the University of Florida. We started it in 2002, again, to teach the lawn care and pest control industries how to do their jobs following the best management practices. It was not enough at this time to just be green. We had to think about keeping the environment clean as well as keeping things green. 2003, we do have, of course, a large Spanish population in Florida. DEP provided more money to translate the manual into Spanish. And then in 2004, they also expanded the program to develop an online educational program, extend the statewide training program, and to develop videos that would be used for homeowner education. 2007, the grant was extended again. To date, total funding from DEP for this grant has been about $700,000. Not bad for an extension program that started out totally voluntary and has been met with quite a bit of resistance from the industry. Really an amazing amount of money, but it starts to all come into shape because now we are seeing that this is becoming a regulated thing. Now, the Department of Agriculture is now incorporating either all or some portion of the BMP education into its pesticide testing for the licensed pest control operators. So it's now going to become regulated. They're just starting this process now, and this will provide for regulation of this program starting sometime in 2008 at a statewide level. So now we have both the county ordinances and now a statewide ordinance. And we never would have thought it going back to 2000, 2001, but in so many ways right now, a statewide regulation is seen as beneficial by most of the industry, most of the folks, because there's uniformity in that. You don't have all of these 17 or 18 local governments providing their own version of what this input should be. So we have this educational program. It's a six-hour program. They get 4 to 5 CEUs. They get a certificate. This is an old copy of our certificate. We are now going to numbered sealed certificates that are only issued from my office or from DEP. So we're really having, now as this is becoming regulatory, we're really having to tighten up this program and really address issues on how folks get certified, how we maintain integrity of the program. We have decals that we're not really distributing at this time. These are designed to go on the trucks. The reason we're not distributing them is because most of the local governments are doing this on their own at this time. So we're kind of holding off on this, but we thought that would be a pretty nice decal for folks to use. As I said, we talk about, you know, turf grass. We go into talk about turf grass care, and it never ceases to amaze me when you take a group of folks who work on lawns, municipal athletic fields, parks, recreational areas, they don't know about the different turf grass species or varieties. They don't know much about the basic management. Does not make a lot of sense. So we spend a little time teaching them about that. We talk about soil testing, cleaning up fertilizer spills, leaving buffer zones around our water bodies, and using deflector shields on fertilizer spreaders. We talk about evapotranspiration and monthly rainfall throughout the state of Florida, importance of not wasting water and what some things that they can do to prevent that are, and about, you know, getting your water on target as well as getting your fertilizers on target, importance of changing our irrigation systems, on a regular basis. Pest control, pesticide safety. And we always try and inject a little bit of humor in there because it gets to be a fairly dry day. So we always try and keep people a little bit awake with a little bit of humor. We also have the program being conducted in Spanish through the Rookery Bay National Research Estuarine. This is in Naples. It's been deemed a standalone training facility for this course, and that's because the city of Naples was the first community in Florida to require and to start actually enforcing that folks be certified in the BMPs. It's largely Hispanic, so they hired a Hispanic training coordinator, and he's doing a fantastic job down there with this program. All right, so real quickly, let me just show you a few slides on what our impact has been, or as our extension dean likes to say, so what? Tell me what's so great about your program. These are the number of folks that we've trained over the years. 2003, when the program started, I mean, we were practically having to drag people into these sessions back then. They were coming just for CEUs, and I think maybe also because they got a free lunch. That had something to do with it. But notice now, 2007, this is through September of 2007, our numbers have tripled, basically, in the number of folks trained with the impending regulatory efforts now underway. So we're really starting to get many folks into these programs now. Impacts, they're pretty consistent. Generally, folks across the board feel that they know a lot more about the topics. 98% will use materials. We also do some trainings through the county extension offices that don't go through my entire statewide training. These have been hard to regulate, though, just because we haven't always had good communication on how, when the extension agents are doing the programs, they don't always report. So now we've had to, again, really tighten up the reporting on this program as well. 2004, very similar, 99% felt they knew more about the topics. We started doing pre and test post scores. Average increase was 15%, 72% would recommend BMPs, and 470, give or take, were trained through county offices. 2005, it's real similar. I mean, these numbers are consistent. We only reported 140 trained through county extension offices, though, in 05, for whatever reason, most likely reporting. 06, again, these numbers are so consistent. 07, we see a much larger increase in the pre-post-test scores, so folks are really taking this post-test seriously. They have to get a score of a 75 to get one of those certificates of completion, and that's what they need to keep their licenses or keep their jobs in some cases. These are just the percent of increase, the trainings that I do on a statewide basis, those done by the county agents, and those done at the Rookery Bay facility, and the percentage of folks who pass. Not everybody passes. Basically, if they stay awake and pay attention, they're going to be able to pass. Pre-test, post-test scores, again, you'll notice that at Rookery Bay, the pre- and post-test scores are significantly lower than they are. Again, that's because of the high Hispanic population, and so they actually spend some time kind of spoon-feeding the information on a more intense basis for these folks. We also have started instituting a follow-up survey that we'll send out about 6 months after we do this training, trying to assess what our impact has been on practices change. So we have several questions, and I just want to go over one of them here. Who do you call for a problem lawn? I thought this was pretty interesting what the professional folks say they do. County extension agent, 6 folks. Chemical company rep, 3 respondents. Private consultant, 2 respondents. In-house agronomist or other, 2. And if you're a state turf specialist at UF, only 1 customer is going to call you. I'm not sure I like these results, but hopefully we can work on changing those. That's all I've got for you for today. We don't have time for questions on this, but we will have time for questions and discussion afterwards. So I thank you all for your participation and interest here this morning. Thank you.